Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Musician Steve Earle has long touched his fans with his heartfelt lyrics and versatile voice, and the guitar-wielding son of the South has glided between genres over his long career. The Grammy winner has released more than 14 albums since bursting onto the country charts in the mid-80s. He's also an accomplished poet, playwright, and author, whose debut novel, I'll Never Get Out of This World Alive, has the same title as his most recent studio album. Earle has also brought his lived-in authenticity to his acting roles in shows like The Wire and Tremé. Earle has spent much of the year on the road and will bring his solo acoustic tour to the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie on Sunday, September 30th at 7 p.m. Earle surprised me when we spoke on Wednesday afternoon. He'd been watching the Yankee game when we called, and truth be told, so had I.
I grew up in Texas, and, you know, I was 6 years old in 1961. We didn't get baseball until 62. My granddad was a Yankees fan. You got either the Yankees or the Dodgers on TV in the middle of the country in those days, so I never had a chance. My granddad mustered out of the Army here and lived in New York until he was drug home kicking and screaming to run the family hardware store when his dad died. And he was famous for, like, just when the Yankees were playing, which was mostly day games in those days, he would just leave a sign out in the till open in his hardware store and go back in the office and listen to the game on the radio. He was terrible about that. But I never had a chance. I got my first transistor radio for the 1961 World Series as a gift from him. It's been great for me living here.
Is it hard to keep up with baseball being on the road as much as you are?
No, because I'm kind of obsessive about it. I have it on my computer. I have it on my phone. If I'm at a market, I can literally get televised games on my phone. And definitely on my computer, and I order Yes Network on the buses that I travel on in the States. It gets a little weird. I was out of the country for the World Series in 09, and so I literally spent the night in London rather than riding the bus to Birmingham and took a train the next day to see the deciding game of that, and I was up all night. I got no sleep during that whole tour because the games were on, like, you know, they were 10 o'clock at 11 o'clock at night starts or sometimes later.
I went down to Florida for my grandfather's 85th surprise birthday party and spent most of it at the bar watching Pettit face the Phillies for that World Series. So that sounds familiar to me.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy down there, man. I feel bad for the Rays. You know, I have to hand the Rays some, you know, you got to give them a lot of props because they have to play under the worst conditions. They have the worst ballpark in Major League Baseball. And they have to play for as many Yankees fans as they do Rays fans every single game they play. So you got to give them something, no doubt about it.
So, all right, Steve Earle, you're playing a concert. There's a game on over the bar. Are you able to keep in one eye on the game?
Well, I don't play that many bars anymore, thank God. It would be tough. I know I was at Soundcheck that game, that Yankees-Red Sox game where Pedro and where Don Zimmer charged Pedro.
Sure, 2003, yeah.
Pedro screamed out, and it kind of shut Soundcheck down. We didn't really get a Soundcheck that day. Everybody else just sort of stood around, and we were in Massachusetts too, so it was weird. But it's one of those things. It can be disruptive to my, especially in a pennant race this time of year. I mean, baseball. I've always said that. You know, baseball parks are the one place I walk in, and as soon as I get where I can see the grass, my blood pressure automatically drops, except during the playoffs.
I know what you mean. So would you do, the minor league stadium tour thing that Dylan did a few years ago? I mean, that might be good for you.
Oh, I would love to do that. We go to baseball when we're on the road. Anytime we're in a major league town, we get tickets for wherever we are, and we go, you know, everybody. There's a couple of people that aren't interested in the band and the crew, but we go to a lot of baseball games. But playing in the ballparks, I shot a video I lived in Nashville for 33 years. And that was the Yankees double-A ball in the 80s, which was great. But I had a song in The Rookie and the closing credits song and
sure.
A song called Some Dreams that I wrote specifically for the film. And we shot the video in Greer Stadium, which was a blast. But I'd love to play a tour of nothing but baseball parks.
I remember when that pitcher, who later became the subject matter for The Rookie, came up with the Rays as a reliever, almost 40 years old. At the time, they said it was cinematic. I mean, were you paying attention to that story as it was coming out, or did you get involved in the movie?
I remember hearing about it. You know, it's like it's the division, you know, so you were aware of it, you know. So it was, and he was from Texas, which I'm from Texas, too. So Texas is like, the one part about the movie, that the part of it that really was interesting is Texas is a football state, you know, without a doubt, and baseball's not as important. But took us forever to get baseball in Texas. Now we got two teams, and you know, I remember the Colt 45s coming and becoming the Astros. But it was too late for me. I was already a Yankees fan. My granddad had me, and I was got my first transistor radio for the 61 World Series, and it was over. I was irrecoverable at that point.
Well, now the Astros are going to be in the AL next year. They'll be playing the Yankees. It'll come full circle for you.
Yeah, I know. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. Maybe it'll be good for that franchise. I feel bad because people really try to support baseball in that town, and there's been some great players come through that franchise, and they've had pretty bad luck.
Well, Steve Earle, should I ask you about some music?
Yeah, sure.
Our listeners might be getting a little confused.
I can't help it. I apologize.
No, I'm right with you on the baseball stuff, believe me.
Yeah.
All right, so you're going to be playing acoustic. This is a solo tour at the Bardavon this weekend. Is there more freedom for you when you're not with the band?
Yeah, I don't. The luxury I afford myself when I'm touring by myself, besides I actually do make more money because it's you know, there's not many people to pay. But I do it because it's good for me. It's really good. It's comforting to me to know that I can still do it. You know, I like knowing that if the whole thing fell apart, that I could go down the subway and busk and make my rent if I absolutely had to. And yeah, that's how I started out, was just by myself, and because I kind of started out in coffee houses, and you know, I don't. So there's that, but the main thing, one of the things I like about it is I don't have to make a set list. When I'm touring with a band, everybody starts freaking out about 6 o'clock in the evening. Where's the set list? Where's the set list? And I'm, you know, it's, you know, everybody wants to know. The band wants to know. The guitar techs want to know because they want to know what guitars to get ready. And I don't change it that much, but I change it some, and I'll call the occasional audible. It could be worse. They could work for Bruce Springsteen. But Bruce makes a set list, but it's absolutely meaningless after the first song. He could do pretty much anything. And I just, solo shows, I go out there, and I kind of know what I'm going to play first, and that's about it. It does sort of, I've done about a week of them now, then I'll sleep in my own bed upstate when I'm coming up to play these last two shows in Bethel and Poughkeepsie. I've got a house in Woodstock. But the freedom of it. I mean, occasionally somebody will holler out a song, and sometimes I'll play it because if I can remember it. Sometimes I don't because I can't. This is I have an album coming out in March 5th. You know, that we recorded. It's in the can. It's going to come out March 5th next year. But it's my 15th studio album, and that kind of blows my mind. But it's, you know, it's kind of hard to remember everything when you've written as many songs as I have.
You're also an accomplished writer. You had a book out. You're working on a memoir, as I understand. How do you figure out where your efforts will go, you know, when you're not on the road? You know, you could work on the book today. You could work on a song. You could work on an album. I mean, how do you split your time up?
It's hard sometimes. I go through, you know, today I should be working on the book, and I'm not because I'm just sick of writing about me. And I just have to, that's the only problem with the memoir. There's days when I just can't face it. But I've made some progress on it, and I think it's going to be worth reading. But, you know, it's just hard to, you just have to, it depends on how you feel. And sometimes it depends on what you need to get done. I mean, I have deadlines, and I like deadlines. I like, you know, some deadlines pass for discipline. You know, I will create deadlines for myself, so I have to get something done by a certain amount of time. I'll create a legal deadline just to make sure I get it done to keep myself honest. I'm okay with that. I'm kind of an adult about that at this point in my life.
I recently read an interview with you where you talked about being approached on the street by people who recognize you from playing Waylon on The Wire as being one of the more rewarding things that's happened in your life, which it kind of surprised me with the musical career you've had. It was a minor but very touching role on that show that meant so much to you.
Well, it's really, a lot of it has to do with how much the show means to people. I mean, David Simon's a really good friend of mine. I'm really proud of him and really, you know, happy for him, because that's what he's a guy making art for the right reasons in a medium where you don't have to be successful. In fact, he would probably be more successful if he would bring my character on Treme back as a vampire, he would probably have better ratings. But it's not. He has more integrity than that, so I'm dead on that show, and I'm dead. That's all there is. I'm going to stay dead. So it's an amazing. A lot of people think it's just the best show that's ever been on television. And you'd be amazed how many people believe that and how many people say, and it's all over the world. So I learned a lot from doing it, and you know what? It's brought a few people to my music that never listened to it before, so it's hard to complain about it.
Was there a lot of crossover with your own personal life? I know you've had struggles, and you've been pretty honest about them. This character was on The Wire, you know, a reformed addict who is now helping someone else become clean.
Yeah, well, that's like, I mean, David wrote the part for me, and it required zero acting, which is the reason I had, you know, only a small amount of trepidation about doing it. And it didn't require any acting at all.
But my disease is out there in that parking lot doing push-ups on steroids, waiting for the chance to kick my ass up and down the street again. Scars on my hands, on my feet, two bouts of endocarditis, hep C and whatnot, knocking down walls and kicking out windows in my liver. I lost a good wife, bad girlfriend, and the respect to anyone that ever tried to loan me money or do me a favor.
Harley, the character on Treme, was similar, but actually required more acting. Even though Harley was a musician, I got to sing my own songs, but I was really playing a person that was sort of fundamentally different than I am. Waylon's a redneck recovering addict. That requires no acting.
How did that relationship with David Simon come about in the first place?
He's a huge music fan, and he used a song of mine in a miniseries called The Corner that he did for HBO. And then when he was writing the first episodes of The Wire, he called my manager and said, I'm writing this character that I think might be good for Steve. And he tracked me down, and I read for it in a recording studio in Nashville, and you know, they filmed it, and I read it, and I got the part. And I mean, it was written for me. He was just hoping. I would have had to really suck probably not to get it. But next thing I knew, I was on a plane to Baltimore. And I was in the show off and on for the 5 years, and a lot in the fifth year. And I was making, it was weird, I just moved to New York when we started filming the fifth season. I was making Washington Square Serenade. I'd make that record. I'd like work a day on the record, and then I'd have a day where I'd have to shoot. So I'd just take the train from New York down to Baltimore the night before. As soon as I'd work in the studio till the last train, you know, 7 or 8 or something, and take the train to Baltimore, get up, do the early shoot, and I'd be back in the studio. They'd work on something else while I was gone, and I'd be back in the studio usually by dinner time.
Steve Earle, politics has always been a big part of your act. Is the 2012 election playing any part in your live shows now?
Sure. I can't avoid it. I'm playing an Obama fundraiser on Monday night, actually. You know, this is an important election, and usually the best thing I can do for a candidate is stay as far away from it as possible, because, you know, it's one of those deals. But I actually have a function in the campaign to see Barack Obama reelected, and that is that I can travel around the country, and I can assure people that are worried about that might vote for Barack Obama but are afraid to because they think he's a socialist, that I'm a socialist, Steve Earle. I'm a socialist, and I promise you, Barack Obama's not. And I'm going to vote for him anyway.
Well, now you can never run for office, you realize, now that you've said
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, I'm not glad he got it.
I understand you have a new young child. How has that changed your outlook?
Changes everything. He's two, and he's pretty cool. But he's like, it gets me, you know, I'm actually starting to shed a few pounds. He's hard to keep up with otherwise.
One other question I had for you. You've produced a lot of other artists, and you've had A-list producers produce your albums. What makes someone a good producer or a good fit for somebody?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on the artist, but for me, you know, I wanted to work with T-Bone Burnett because T-Bone's a songwriter, which makes him a really qualified producer for songwriters. And the same, I want to work with Joe Henry one of these days because he's a songwriter. I approach it from as an arranger and as a writer when I do it. I'm really interested in the songs and how strong the songs are, and I try to approach it as a teacher. I try to for whoever I work with to learn something, whether it's somebody making their first record or Joan Baez, and I expect to learn something myself, and I usually do.
Okay, last question. Do you keep score at a Yankee game?
No, I haven't tested positive for that yet. it's like, but I may end up being one of those old farts that goes to spring training every year and keeps scoring all that stuff. I'm kind of headed in that direction. So I've got it pretty bad.
Steve Earle, he'll be at the Bardavon this Sunday, September 30th at 7 p.m. His most recent album, I'll Never Get Out of This World Alive, is out, and the novel of the same title is now available in paperback as well. Steve Earle, an honor to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, man. Go Yanks.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.